Welcome to Revive Fitness and Nutrition Podcast with your host, Julie Payton-Monk. And today's topic is, It's Clear You're Not Happy. So there's a bit of a story behind the title today. It was something a manager said to me many years ago in my corporate career, when at the time I was working probably 72-hour weeks and being bullied as well at the same time. So there's a number of things going on within the workplace. And I had internal frustration about raising these challenges and nobody really caring or wanting to do anything about it. So today's topic is all about the impact of work stress, being bullied at work, and ways that you can help manage this, and also looking at yourself inwardly, so what you can do differently. And the guest I have on today is Sam Kiani, and I know Sam through the Tim Cooper Academy. Now Sam's come on to coach us on a number of different topics. And what I really love about Sam is she has a different way of letting us look inward. So a bit of reflection, looking at your own behaviours and habits that you might not have thought about before, and it just gives you that different perspective. And that'll probably make a bit more sense once we get into the topic. So thank you, Sam, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here.
And for people who haven't connected with you before, who is Sam?
Who is Sam Kiani? So I now work as a coach. I coach basically all over the world, either individuals, like typically CEOs, directors, regular people, and I also coach companies. I do a lot of team coaching and helping organizations create happier workplaces, more efficient production products, you know, healthy, happier workplaces.
And on a personal level?
Oh, and on a personal level, who I am, yeah. Well, I am sitting here with my 16 and a half year old dog, Slinky the dog, who I absolutely adore. I'm a long-term yogi. And yeah, you catch me in the, I know it's your birthday today, Julie. Yeah. It was mine last week. So we're both Geminis. And you've caught me in my 47th year on this planet.
Yep, so I've just come to join you. I'm 40 today, so
we're in a good space. Welcome to the club.
Absolutely. It's a funny one because people said to me, oh, you're getting old, you're 40. And it's funny, I thought about this today and I thought, I'm going to live till 100s at least. So I've got another 60 years of life to go. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's right. You're not even middle-aged yet.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
So Sam, the reason I want to get you on was I've got a lot of clients at the moment who are from the corporate world I used to be in, and they're experiencing right now a lot of work stress. Obviously there's a lot of stuff going down with lockdown, people are worried about job security, and I can see things that they're doing that I used to do. So in terms of working all hours under the sun, hardly taking any breaks, even working at the weekends as well, and that's obviously encroaching on their overall well-being. But in your experience, obviously it happens not just in the corporate world, outside as well. What would you say are the main kind of factors that kind of cause work-related stress?
It's a really good question. So I think that, you know, I've had quite a long corporate career and I had an unusual path coming into that corporate career. So, you know, I didn't come through like the best university and in through the graduate program. I really hustled my way up from the bottom. And I worked in a lot of technology and change parts of the organizations that I worked for. And what I noticed is that it's never the technical or operational challenge in front of us that really causes us problems at work. It is basically humans. It is in our relationships, and it's those things that cause us stress. And it's usually to do with situations, disconnections that happen that really make us feel uncomfortable, that make us question our own confidence, and make us question our own ability. Those are the things that I think cause people the most stress. And on practical terms, that's usually mismatched expectations, poor communication. And I have to say, in some cases, personality disorders, because in some types of organization, high-pressured sales, banking, these types of organizations, you have a lot of narcissist personality types, and that can be quite damaging and stressful if, you know, whether you know how to manage those personality types or not.
Yeah, and I think I've definitely seen that, and like I said, I can see my clients at the moment about their managers almost having that fear of saying, no, we can't take on that extra work. And then them saying they don't want to turn around and say, I can't take on that extra work, because it's almost like then you'll be deemed as not being the successful person who delivers consistently. And it's like it will go against you in your ratings, it will go against you in future career promotions. And there's points where I've experienced it where I've had to help someone leave the building in absolute tears, just through stress. And they might say to somebody, I'll give you a week off, but they never fully address those issues. So for people who find themselves in that position, what would you say are ways to kind of help yourself manage the stress if you're communicating and you're working with that type of person? Just what are the things you can do within yourself to maybe help in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think boundaries are so important, and I think that the best way to manage the stress when you're in that situation is to try and avoid getting into that in the first place. And I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive, and if you're in that situation right now, you're like, damn it, that's just not helpful. But I think we train people how to treat us, and setting boundaries as to, let me make it a bit more realistic, because when I say setting boundaries, you might think, what does that mean? So I think just being able to be really realistic about what we can fit into a day, and like, there's a difference between going the extra mile in an exceptional circumstance and always going the extra mile. So I know, for example, I totally made a rod for my own back by always being the one to stay late. But then it's interesting because I recognize that part of the reason why I did that is I didn't realize, but I had these perfectionist tendencies. Because I always thought that being a perfectionist meant everything that you did was freaking amazing. And I was like, nothing I do is quite good enough, right? I always have to do more. I have to do more. I have to do more than everyone else because what I'm doing is not quite good enough. And actually, that is perfectionism.
You basically just described my experience as well. So I was also the person who was always staying late, who was deemed as a high performer, somebody who delivered without compromising quality. And for me, that's where the perfectionist came. And it would be working late to get that document or presentation, whatever it was, to the point that I was happy to release it. And it is, and even with deadlines, it still meant working all hours. And even now, it's interesting, although like with career change, I've learned that you take those habits with you.
Yeah, you really do. Yeah. And the interesting thing as well is that what I also, I wonder if you notice this too, right? Is that a lot of the pressure we might feel is coming from work, it's actually coming from us internally. And what I notice is there's like almost like three domains of stress, right? There's what might be going on in the external world. So like coronavirus, that's created a lot of uncertainty in, well, in our life in general, right? And so that's a cause of stress. We have the team dynamics around us, like what our manager or our leader is like and what our colleagues are like. But then there's also this internal dimension, and if we can master this internal dimension, it really does help us deal with the stress from the other two domains. What seems to really hold us back is when we're doing a lot of the beating up on ourselves internally.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, I was seen as a challenger in terms of calling out. And people say, oh, it doesn't matter what level the manager is, you'll call things out, you don't seem to have any fear. And I think that was because there was a time where I was delivering film in for a new behavioral learning program, and it was MDs from across different areas of the business. And I got an insight into seeing how their self-confidence was in front of camera when they had to talk about stuff. And these are people you put on a pedestal. And thinking, oh my God, that's that person high up and they're great and you want to please them all the time. And then to see their inner fight with confidence when it came to delivering something to camera that thousands and thousands of staff will see, that kind of gave me that insight to actually they're just people as well.
It's really true. And I think maybe we all had this moment when Michelle Obama talked about imposter syndrome. you know. And also, I've one of my friends is actually one of the CEO and one of the founders of a company called Mimecast, that, you know, a phenomenally successful global company. And he talked about, you know, because I remember him starting that business, you know, him and his friends, we met in a coffee shop. And now, of course, they've got like a whole board of directors, they're a listed company. And I was like, wow, you know, that's such a huge journey. You know, how did you find that, you know, going from being the founder to, you know, being there with a board of directors around you? And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to lie, we all struggle with imposter syndrome. Doesn't matter if you're male or female, famous or not, CEO or not, you know, we all have this common thing of being human.
And that's it, because a lot of people say to me, oh, you're so confident. And even what I do now, being when I do group fitness in front of 20 people, oh, you're so confident. Like, people have no idea like what's going on inside. You cannot tell at all what's going on. And I am the person who has to be prepared. Otherwise, that comfort level is just not going to be there, and I'll mess things up completely. And it's just interesting, yeah, because I would be the person that always said, like you say, yes to things, even if I wasn't comfortable. Can you do a presentation on development? Can you do a presentation on mind mapping to the rest of the team? And I'd be like, I always say yes, although I'm totally uncomfortable with that. And then people's perceptions behind that is, you're really confident, you're such a confident person. And I'm like, no, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, one of the ways we totally stress ourselves out is comparing our inside with other people's outside, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think if people are listening to this, where do they start? How do they start by, is it just recognizing that, or is there a bit of self-work you need to do around that, certain tools or systems you can use?
Well, I think that, so handling stress, I mean, you know, there's a lot that's kind of spoken about around self-care. And so I won't be boring and talk too much about that. But I think it really, and you know from the Tim Cooper Academy, right, is that how important it is, like the power of reflection. Yeah. So being able to be mindful, as in to disengage from all our neurotic thoughts, all those voices going around in our head, and being able to just sit with our breath, or if even that is very difficult, just being able to go out for a walk, disengage from the worry and just be, just breathe, and then like reflect. And I know through, you know, a set of reflection questions, you know, how did I choose to show up today? What went well? What would I like to do better next time? You know, how did I connect with other people, and how did I manage my energy? If you ask yourself those questions every day, and I'm pretty sure, Julie, you have as part of the Academy, right? Yeah. That you start to see trends and patterns. And as soon as you can spot a pattern, that's where you can start to liberate yourself from it. Because, for example, as soon as you recognize that you do 20 times more work than your peer to get what you do out, or your team does out perfect, you can then make a choice. So for example, when I realized that, I was like, oh my goodness, so how do I do less? My yardstick tells me I have to do all this and it might just be good enough. So it's about experimenting. So that's the power of reflection with an experiment. So I started to think, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get fired, right? But what's one thing I cannot do? And so I'd start dropping things off the to-do list, one thing at a time. And the first time I did it, I swear I was like, you know, in panic for like about 2 weeks, and no one noticed. And the long story short is, over the course of about 2 months, I managed to drop about 50% off my to-do list. No one noticed. The wheels didn't fall off. And I was happier. And because I was happier, everyone around me was a bit more relaxed. So I think it's that trick of reflect so you notice the patterns, and then just find a very small, safe enough to try experiment of doing something different and see what the outcome is.
Yeah, I love that, Sam, because actually you're taking me back. You're reminding of something I started trying as well. Because it was a world of meetings for meeting's sake, and it used to drive me crazy. And it was so many people from each team would come and represent each team, and it's like, this is like overkill. And you would turn up and you'd just be there to listen. So I started not going to meetings and just reading the minutes and seeing if anyone would notice. And then you'd go, oh, were you at that meeting? Like general, when you had been to a meeting, I was like, yeah, I was there. And I thought, so you don't even notice when I'm there. Will you even notice if I'm not there? So I started not attending some of the meetings, and people just never even realised. And keeping up with minutes and responding when I needed to do, and that saved me so much time. That meant I could then spend that time doing the work that needed to be done.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I think that's a great tip. Like, one of the things that Seth Godin talks about, you know, because one of the other things I think that causes our stress is overwhelm. And I noticed that over the course of my career, it really is something that started to happen maybe about 10 years ago now, that there was a change. Before, it used to be, we used to have to pull information towards us. Now it's the opposite. You know, it's like trying to drink from a fire hose. Like, we get so much, you know, directed at us all the time. And this leads us to us feeling stressed and overwhelmed. But the best way to overcome that is to literally weed out everything. Like, stop all, like, not your podcast, obviously, but stop the podcasts, you know, stop all the subscription newsletters, stop watching all the TV, stop all social media, and look, boom, you've probably got 6 hours back a day. Then you can selectively add back in the things that you really miss, the things that really add value. And that is, I think, that concept works for what I've just spoken about, but it also really works for our activities at work. Yeah, I loved what you said.
Yeah, I think there's things where we sign up to them, especially for work, you're told to sign up. Have you signed up? You might have to get an action that week. Make sure you sign up for this, make sure you sign up for that. And it might be you don't even read it because you just don't have the time. But it's still there in your inbox, and it's building in the back of your mind going, I've still not done that thing, I've done that thing. God, I hope they don't ask about it. And we used to have a weekly comms meeting, and my God, you had to read through at least 50 odd different comms messages about things that weren't even related to the job that you did, but you're expected to know about them, and you get catered on it, you get questions on it. Fast dates, numbers, whatever. And I was like, seriously, this is not even related to what I need to know. But you still had to go and read it. And I think it's things like that where then it drops off, but you still get sent those things. So it's still in the back of your mind that you might get tested on it at some point, so you need to know, and it just adds to that stress. So I think it's about prioritising actually what's going to help me do my job better, rather than what's going to, you know, be deemed as, oh yeah, that person knows that knowledge. They actually might not know it, but if you're going to put it into practice, it's two different things.
I think that's a really great point. Because isn't it true? Like, it's like having a browser tab open in our head. And that just really degrades the performance of our brain, you know? And I really love, there's a lot of research. I mean, I'm a real science nerd as well. And if you want to live to 100, I bet you are too, a bit of a biohacker with our little red light.
I'm getting therapy. Into it. I have to say, it's quite recent for me. So I'm getting into it. So I'm watching Sam. I'm going, what's Sam up to? What's she doing? I'm just having a little look at it.
Yeah, and I love that. I mean, one of there are a lot of amazing sources of research around you know, productivity and what enables us to be at our best. NASA is a great source, and also too is Google. And we know that, you know, about all those long hours that you were talking about, that is just, you know, that's not a way to be productive. And much as we feel like we might be, because we're working long, long hours, there's just, like, if you can imagine, like, a curve of our effectiveness, it just drops off. And so what I think is a really helpful pattern people can try is you maybe start with 25 minutes, but like a period where you concentrate, no flipping on Facebook, no flipping on Insta, just concentrating, get one task done, 25 minutes done, and then take a short 5 minute break. That's going to feel quite difficult if what you're used to doing is multitasking with email, calendar, people talking to you, you know, 57 things going on at once. But over time, as you build your concentration muscle, you can get to like working in these 50-minute blocks of like concentration, and then 10-minute blocks of like social time, not social media time, but like getting up, something that's unfocused, you know? And you can intersperse that with, in the middle of the day, you know, a period of exercise, you know, do one of your classes, get your heart rate up, get sweating, and actually time bounding your day, that the maximum is between, let's say, 8:30 and 5:30 or 6, because you will actually be far more effective in that time than if you work over a much longer period. And you have to ask yourself, do you want to be effective, or do you want to be seen at your desk? Because if it's about presenteeism, that is a different issue, you know?
Oh, totally on topic there. So we used to get, totally, have to be in the office, have to be seen to be working, drove me nuts. I mean, just because you're staring at your screen doesn't mean you're actually working. But then they got a bit more flexible on it, but then you start to get pop-up like Skype for Business and things like that, and I refused to use mine. And I said, no, I don't need more distractions in life. And now people sit and live and they can't leave their computer screen because someone might not think they're working if they're not there to respond straight away. And that's the world they're kind of in at the moment with these messages pinging up. And for me, I started doing the 50 blocks, as you say, 50-10. Mm-hmm. Oh, so frustrating, the corporate behaviours I've built over 14 years. I am an absolute multitasker. Oh, remember I need to do that. Remember I need to do that. And it drives me nuts. And it's what you said about having to train focus, and you don't realize that you have to train it. And it is frustrating. But ultimately, if you want to challenge yourself and be better at what you're doing and, you know, enhance your life overall, you need to stick with it and keep with it, because we're not going to build that quickly when we spent 14 years of multitasking and doing different things and all these distractions that come in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think as well, just sometimes we don't feel empowered, like, to be different. And there is, in some companies, because like the world of work is like, even the government has issued a report called, you know, Industrial Revolution 4.0, right? Knowledge workers and the world of work has fundamentally changed. The managerial structures that you're just describing, Julie, are part of the past. It's so old school, it doesn't fit this unpredictable, volatile, complicated, or complex and adaptive world we find ourselves living in. And so people will vote with their feet. The difficulties of Corona and the unpredictability will crush these companies, unfortunately, because For businesses to survive, they need to be nimble, right? They need to have a workforce that is motivated and engaged, because, you know, 10 of us are far more intelligent than one of us. We're no longer back in the 1800s where one person had to have the answer and to tell everyone in the company what to do. This is a very outdated idea. And so in these working practices, if you're working in a department where there is this addiction to being busy, right, and you feel like you're under pressure to do the productivity equivalent of eat junk food you know, watch trash TV all day, you can say no. And this is something that, you know, it's such a passion of mine, because once you know how to be productive, you don't want to go back to being unproductive, right? And so this is how I train people. I'm like, listen, I'm not going to be available on chat all the time. If you need me and it's urgent, this is a protocol of how you can get hold of me. Because I do believe that in corporate environments, there are situations where people do need to be able to get hold of you, like stat. But equally, if you're working in 50-minute chunks, realistically, they're not going to have to wait that long to get hold of you, right?
Yeah.
So if you can explain to people why you're working in the patterns that you are, and that you demonstrate delivery, right, pretty quickly. You know, I had a boss who was quite resistant, but I just stood my ground. He was quite narcissistic, by the way, and this is where it's very important to have boundaries, stand your ground without getting angry. And I just said, well, this is the way I work. Yeah, I'm flexible because you can reach me if you need, but this is how I'm going to work because this is how I know I can get done what I need to do. And do you know what happened after like 2 months? He came up to me and he asked me and he was like, can you show me what you do with those reminders on your phone? Because I just see how you get so much more done than I can. And so Brilliant. He started to want to know the tips of how I worked.
Brilliant. And that is a much better way than what happened with me. It took me to break my leg and ankle to golf for 3 months before I came back in and reset the boundaries and challenged being able to work from home. And I remember my senior manager saying, yeah, you have changed my mindset about how it does work and how you do get much more done. But that was quite an extreme that I went to before I could change those behaviours, whereas your one's much more doable.
Well, you know what I think is the common thing between us two, though, Julie, is that you have to get to the point where you've got no other choice, you know, like where you're like, I just, like, this is how it has to be for me. And so sometimes, yeah, you might have to break your leg or, God forbid, become sick with a really serious illness, right? Or you can just decide right now, my happiness is really important. And so this is what it's going to take, you know?
Yeah, and I think a lot of time we don't see beyond where we are in the current moment. As I said, I kind of was sleepwalking my way through corporate life, and that was my wake-up point. And I think for a lot of people, they can't see beyond that. And when you say, what is it you want for life? And when I speak to clients and say, okay, you're in this place right now, what is going to change by you working all hours? What about your life outside of that? What is it you want from life? And they get stuck because they don't know, because work has become their life.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, I think, you know, you used to see this archetype, you know, maybe like your granddad might be like that, where they had one job for all their life, then they retired and they didn't know what to do with themselves. And then, you know, that generation would die quite quickly after they retired because it was like their life lost purpose. And I think we're lucky in a way that we don't have that as much now, but so much of us, because work is quite addictive, you know, because it's intense and it's demanding and we can get a lot of recognition that way. We can get totally sucked in. And I think it's, I really like this idea of, you know, like the wheel of life.
Yeah.
And if you divide your life into, say, 6 or 8 segments, just look at where you put your energy. Because I realised, for example, that almost all my energy was going into work. And what about my friends and my family and my loved ones? And, you know, like my lovely dog that I was just telling you about, you know, how much of his life am I enjoying if all I'm doing is work, work, working?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the same for me. I was like 100% work. And there's times I'd openly say to people that I put the company before my own husband, I'm like, check, what are you even saying? When I think about that now, I think, oh my God, can't believe that. But it's like what you say, when you're a people pleaser and you want to please people and make their lives easier, you'll put everything in and neglect your own life and every other aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a really interesting piece of research that within team structures, generally, employees or people will put the team priorities first, then they put their own priorities, you know, and then anything else is tertiary to that. But here's another really scary thought, is that we did the Tim Cooper Academy, didn't we, this week on relationships? Yeah. And it's such a topic, isn't it, finding our soulmate. We put so much effort into that, and then we actually spend way more time with people at the office.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was something that I always said to other people, is that you spend more time at work than you do at home. So if you don't enjoy what you're doing, that's going to have a fundamental impact on the rest of your life. But at the same time, if you then start investing everything in your work, it's going to have a fundamental impact because you're not going to have any sort of balance.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the takeaway for me is that we don't meet a romantic partner and pretty much expect that it's going to work perfectly, you know, and yet we do kind of have those expectations at work. you know, we start the new job and we think it's going to be awesome, but we haven't even been on a date with them first, right? We haven't done like the Friday drink and then the Saturday night dinner and then the meet the parents. We've just had to go in pretty cold from, you know, the interview where, let's face it, no one gets real with each other.
And
I think that, you know, there's this, the stress that comes from the team dynamic is that, you know, different personality types, you know, some combinations work really well and others don't. It's nothing personal. It is literally just like an energy dynamic. And I think that, you know, back in the 90s, it was quite trendy in business circles. It was quite a thing to kind of to focus on team dynamics. Yeah. That if you were building a team, you'd do some kind of work to understand people's personality types, and you'd actually do some work to see how people got along with each other. And I don't see this happening now in companies, not until they engage someone like me. But when they build teams, they just throw people together and hope that it works, you know. And I think that leaves a lot of people feeling like they're failing when it's really nothing to do with them. It's just not personally related mismatch.
Yeah, and just with you saying that, there's so many times that I've done those personality things as a team, all different methods of it, Myers-Briggs and all the rest of it, and having your different colour blocks depending on which one's the strongest, and to help understand each other. And it probably lasts about a week going, oh, that's interesting, Sam's like this or that, or so-and-so's a bit of a dictator, or they're a creative one, that's why they think I'm always like raining on their sunshine. And but yeah, it doesn't matter, because then you get put in projects with different people and it doesn't matter who's got what personality types, because it's like, we need to get work done. Crack on, we need to get work done.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think like those personality tests, they're a tool. And if that, it's like having a, you know, having a screwdriver. If you never use the screwdriver, all you do is have all these screws that you can't, like, you can't use properly. And I think that that's kind of a bit of the metaphor, because there is very little time that's invested in allowing people that little bit of space to like properly connect. And where people have that space, you know, that's where you see high performing teams, isn't it? You know, where there's a little bit of social time, where there's a little bit of bandwidth. But I think with all the pressure to just do, yeah, it kind of goes by the wayside, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I'm just reflecting on the times that I worked in sort of the best teams, was where we did connect on a number of levels and people did share about their lives in and out of work, and they were able to have a life outside of work. We did work hard, we were a very close team, but we'd have fun with it. So we'd have like a swear box, and you know, I'd have two for Tuesdays where it'd be double fine for swearing on Tuesday. And we saved up that money, and God, we got like over £140 and went out on a night out and things like that. So it's how you build that team dynamic together.
Yeah. And what do you think helped that that dynamic to flourish like that?
I think it was understanding that we're all under pressure and we all want to do a good job, and everyone was equally pulling their weight. There wasn't ever that single so-and-so's like walking off at four and we're all here till whatever time. It was always going, what's our challenges? What can we help with? Listening to each other. I think that's a big thing as well. Listening rather than saying, oh, they're just moaning. Because I think that's a fear, but it can also say, well, this person could come and just moan about their work, and rather than actually actively listening to people and going, what's happening, not just in work, but in your life, and supporting people inside and outside of work as well.
Yeah, I think it really helps to like reflect on, you know, what does it take to like to be, or what does it mean to be a good team member? You know, because I think there's that quote, I forget who said it. I think, was it Maya Angelou who said, you know, people don't remember what you said or what you did, but they remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
Now, of course, I don't believe that anyone makes anyone feel a certain way, but it's like the feelings that arise through spending time with someone. I really notice this in teamwork, because you get people who are not very self-aware, who do whatever they do, and if you don't happen to naturally connect with them, you know, you can be left feeling not very good. And I think it's those types of interactions that degrade teamwork over time. Whereas if we can just be a little bit more aware, you know, aware of the energy, not bringing lots of negative vibes into the group, but being honest, you know, and, you know, just kind of caring about each other. Like you said, you had some kind of connection into each other's lives. I think this, those two or three things, you know, being aware of the energy you bring, actually caring about people on a human level. And also the thing that you said about, you know, being seen and sort of being acknowledged. Those are the three things that I think really build kind of connection and trust in teams.
Absolutely. And feeling, and I think what you just said there, actually, trust, I think that's a big one. I think when you go in the team and, like you were saying about the energy, and you can feel it's tense, then for me personally, I'm somebody who'll observe what's going on, what's the dynamics within the team before I naturally kind of find my own place. But within that, if it feels quite a stressy environment and there's things being said here and there, then you're not going to have that trust and you start to close in on yourself and not share yourself with other people. Out of that fear of being judged or not being seen good enough, or being the one that comes into a new team raising challenges that people are maybe switched off to and aren't interested in discussing.
And I think there is this thing as well that, like, how you feel, like, it's important to care about how you feel, you know. And I don't know about you, but I feel like there is a bit of an ideal that, or a, we can fall into this mental trap of thinking that if we don't feel good in a situation, it's our problem. Like, we don't fit, we have to fix it.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, if something's important to us, it is important. And if that environment constantly makes us feel stressed, that environment's not right for us. It's not because we're weak. It's not because we're less than, it's just we don't thrive in that environment. So, and I think this really plays into like those energy dynamics we were talking about, because it really isn't anything personal. You know, there are environments that I absolutely thrive in, and there's environments that I just don't. And it's not that anybody wants me to fail, but it's just, you know, I kind of think of like, you know, fish in a fish tank, you know. Certain fish, they just need a certain type of environment, don't they? And we're no different.
And I totally spot on there in terms of like, it's not necessarily us. And I think there's a lot of that where you think, oh, everyone else has got getting on, they seem to be connected, but I'm not connecting despite what you might try. And I find that towards the end of my corporate career, I was connecting less and less with people because I had a life outside and I'd set my boundaries in terms of working. I would be working on big sexy projects, as they'd call it, that no one else in my immediate team were working on. So there's more and more disconnect happening, and I felt quite isolated. And I used to say my team aren't the people sitting around me, my team's whoever I was working with. And that's how I kind of managed in that situation where it would feel quite isolated and other people would struggle. So I think it is that thing of looking at yourself and going, whilst this might not be the fish tank for me right now, how can I make it work for me?
Definitely. Yeah. And I think one of the tips in that is like, and it can be really difficult because we have such a personal experience, don't we? Like, we are a person.
Yeah.
So, but it's like, just not to take, really try not to take things personally. That can be really a great insulator. You know, if we're feeling a bit, you know, awkward, to, like you say, have some good strategies, like connecting with people that you naturally vibe with, even if they're not in your team. And just having this mindset, right, that there's nothing wrong with me. This isn't personal, you know?
And that's a tough one if we go back to the topic of bullying, because it's not a word I use lightly. And I know the company I was in, people could name who those individuals are. And as I say, when I was in that situation, it wasn't just me at one point. I mean, there's several people within the team at the same time being affected by this individual. And as much as it was raised, it was like, oh no, they're fine with us, it's cool. And it wasn't until it escalated and affected somebody else in a big way that it's then addressed in a way that that person was moved on. But no one ever acknowledged it or apologised for the situation or not dealing with it. And when you work your butt off to do everything you can to please that person, but they're still bullying you, there's still nothing's ever good enough, it's hard not to take that personally. What would you say in that situation to help your own kind of mental and physical health not being impacted by that?
Right. Oh, that's such a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think there are two situations that happen in organisations that freak managers out and they don't know what to do with. One is bullying and the other one is like, any sort of sexual discrimination. And I guess these days as well, like racial discrimination is like a really hot topic, isn't it? But bullying, it's really interesting because I've had this pattern myself, like of really attracting or getting caught up with bullies. And what I learned is, you know, what you were saying there about, you know, trying to please them. Yeah, you have to not do that right from the beginning. Because the thing that hooks the bully, like bully and the bully, the person being bullied, somehow are connected. And the thing that connects them is this feeling of not being enough. The bully just goes on the offensive and says, right, I have to make you feel less so that I feel enough. And the person being bullied is like, I need to please you to feel enough. So the trick is, and I know this is, there's a bit of an art to this, but the trick is to just know you're enough. And how to not get hooked, there's this little practice called 2% truth, because a lot of what hooks you into a bully is being defensive. This was definitely my pattern anyway. And so they would say something, I'd be like, oh, but no, but, you know, it's, let me just explain. And actually, and, you know, and so the principle of 2% truth is that whatever they say to you, you take it, you just can find a tiny slither of truth in it and then serve it back. So they might be like, well, you, Julie, you just haven't delivered it enough this week, and your reports, they're all late. You can say, well, it is true that I did submit that last report late. Gosh, bad me. And it tends to just completely disarm them, because what they want is that payoff of you submitting to them. So when you don't do it, they just go and find somebody else to bully.
Absolutely. And I was probably hook, line, sinker for the bully, because I ended up I became a different person as a result of trying to please them and never achieving that. And I started to snap back at them. And that's where the title of this podcast comes back, with my manager saying, it's clear you're not happy, because yeah. I got to that point of changing who I was and snapping back at them, coming into work, being miserable every day and not caring who could see that I was miserable every day. And they had said to their PA, oh, it's going to affect their ratings. I'm going to make sure they're not going to get a great rating. And the bully did that. And I thought, you've won. You've impacted everything around our workplace. And then they got moved on and started bullying somebody else. So it's frustrating for me that I let that person kind of get to me to that point that it changed who I was. But
that's the difficulty, isn't it? Is that when these things happen, that's where it comes back to this self-awareness and reflection piece, right? Because especially if you're being bullied by a narcissistic personality type, they tend to not validate how you feel. They have very little empathy, and so they don't validate your feelings. So, oh, Julie, like, you might say, or you might be feeling that you're struggling, and they don't acknowledge that you struggle at all, you know. And so you start to question your own belief in yourself. You start to question who you are and your own capability, and you start to lose confidence. And when that happens, of course, it does affect who you are. And the more you fall down that hole, the less you can connect back with who you really are. And that's part of the reason why it feels so bad, because you're really disconnected from who you really are. So that's why I think this power of self-awareness and of daily reflection can help, because you spot the pattern earlier. You start to see, oh, look, this is actually really affecting me. And then you can choose to take a different action. you know, go to HR, you know, go to speak to a friendly manager in another division, you know, ultimately maybe seek another job at that point, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's important to do that piece, because you get to the point where, as you were saying, when you seek another job, you lose all confidence in yourself and you maybe start applying for things you're not even interested in. So you're jumping rather than going for something that's going to enhance your life. And then you start to doubt yourself, and it's when you're going to go and do like interview prep and you're like, I've got nothing good to talk about. Like, what have I done? I've done nothing of value, because that's been drilled into you. And it was later years when I'd gone for an interview for another role, and some people are like, oh my God, I can't believe how much stuff you've done. And you've done this and done that. It's amazing. But because of the time and all the emotions and what was going on, you just devalue everything that's come out of that situation. So rather than look at the positives, you're focusing on the emotions of that experience.
Yeah. And I think one of the practices that I think is so powerful in that reflection is just, what have I done well today? Because, you know, our brains are naturally wired to focus on, you know, threats to keep us alive. So just anchoring in every day what has gone well. Because, like, for example, for me, I've been working in the corporate space this week. It's been extremely intense. And if I didn't have these practices, I pretty much would be in a puddle right now, feeling like I'd failed. But I know that, because I've been doing it like intraday, you know, in each session that I've run, what has gone well, and it leads me to feel like I can see the success. Don't get me wrong, I see the challenges and I see what needs to be improved, and I see the situations that I can't fix, right? And I can leave them unfixed, that's okay. But it's just how we insulate ourselves from this natural tendency of our brain to be wired for the negative. Very important, I think, Julie, like you say, otherwise you do lose confidence. So how do you stop doing that?
I've always said that I will kick myself harder than anybody else can. No doubt about it.
Yeah. And this is great quote. It's a stoic quote by Seneca, which is like, we suffer far more in imagination than in reality. Right. It's like in our, we catastrophize a lot of things in our head, but they don't really come true.
Yeah, definitely. So Sam, what would you say the top three tips so that you can stay true to yourself when in a difficult kind of relationship team dynamic, just so you don't lose yourself like what I did?
Yeah. So I think that number one, journal. Have a journaling practice where you set your intention at the start of the day, and at the end of the day, you wrap in what's gone well so that you're intentionally living. Two, self-care is really important. And what this means is not making work your whole life, making sure that you invest time in friendships outside of work, in having fun. And because I really think that playfulness and fun is the absolute antidote to stress, and that helps us keep us connected to like who we really are. And last but not least, I think you could do it through your CV. You could do it through a practice called the Merit Book, but just like keeping a professional record of what it is that you're actually doing and delivering, so that, again, you keep a really robust record. Because I know so many people, Julie, we've all been there, of like where we've had the catastrophic experience where we've lost all confidence, and then you pull together your CV and you can't believe that even you could do those things. So if you just keep your CV up to date and review it once a month, you will stay connected to who you are.
Fab, thanks for sharing, Sam. I think it's a great topic, work-related stress and bullying, because I think it's one that people don't ever really delve into and discuss, not just from the point of view of what's been happening, but what is us as individuals, what we can do about it as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for teeing up this discussion. I think it's fantastic.
Okay, we're going to move on to a few lifestyle questions about you to get to know you a little bit more. So we're going to throw some random questions at you. You get a choice of two things. Okay, first up, would you opt for a walk along the beach or for a walk along a river by woodlands?
Oh, great question. But I'm going to have to go for beach. Always the beach.
Hot or cold beach, or does it not matter as long as it's the beach?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I don't even mind a very windswept, cold Scottish beach, you know.
Okay, next one. Now, I know you're not a big meat eater, but I know you've had both of these things. So, would you have again a camel burger or Wagyu beef?
Oh my goodness. Well, I was in Japan earlier this year and I have to tell you, I'd go Wagyu beef.
Yeah, I was like, you can't eat camel, you can't do that. And then I was in Oman. I know you visited Oman, and I had a particularly feisty camel that was in a bad mood because it was hot. I was like, what?
And I did actually eat camel in Oman, funnily enough.
And after that experience with the camel, I was like, make it into a burger. I'm done with him. He's got an attitude. Okay, now the next one might be a tough one for you. You've got the choice of yoga or meditation.
Ooh, good question. Well, I think, gosh, that's really hard. I think I'd have to go right now, the yoga, because at least you can be mindful while you practice. And I am a real fidget bum, and I know the benefit of moving the body, so I'm going to go yoga.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, there's days with meditation you just fight it all the time, where your like mind's just going 100 miles an hour and you need to burn off some energy or just move a bit.
That's right.
Okay, next one, coffee or tea?
Oh, well, I've recently just given up caffeine, so decaf coffee just doesn't feel right. So I'm gonna go green tea.
Green tea. And giving up caffeine, has that been like a conscious choice, or you just felt you were having a bit too much reliance on coffee, or?
Well, it was actually like I noticed that I was getting hormonal headaches. And so, they started to happen every month. And so I started to look into, what affects our hormonal balance. And actually for us women, especially us in our 40s, in the 40s club, caffeine really does impact our hormones. So I thought I'd trial giving it up for a month. And that month I didn't get a headache. So I'm sticking to it,
There you
unfortunately.
go. I've just recently done a women's health and performance course. So I'm now a female health and performance coach. So I'm just going to grab a book and show you this book that I've been
Amazing.
sharing with my clients.
Oh, the period repair manual.
By
Amazing.
Lara Bryden.
Laura Bryden. Yeah, I'm
Yeah,
picking that
amazing
out.
book. I'll send you a link to that one. It's all about exactly that sort of thing. What can we do to have healthier, happier periods rather than just suffering every month?
Right. Yeah, because we're not built to suffer, are we? They're not. It's like a disruption of modern life.
Yeah, they say it's your period health is a checklist, so it's really looking at your health overall by what your period health is, and a lot of people aren't connected to that at all, so it's quite a bit of work I'm doing with clients on that at the moment.
And it links so much with the topic we've been talking about because so much of us are embroiled in workplace stress and bullying, and that just really has an impact on our health. And you kind of see that reflected through things like your cycle, isn't it?
Exactly. Okay, last one, music or books?
Oh, I'm such a bookworm, but I'm going to go with music because I can get too serious and too bookwormy. So I'm, and it's Friday, so let's go music.
Go music. Yeah, Friday, Friday night. And what book are you currently reading at the moment?
What book am I currently reading? That's a really good question because I've got about three that I've started, but I have literally just finished an amazing book called Prometheus Rising, which is a book that's all about human consciousness and like our levels of conditioning and how we can kind of like upgrade our whole conscious experience.
What you're saying about being a science geek.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, by this author called Robert Anton Wilson, who's dead now, but he was a phenomenal researcher. So yeah, a very geeky book, I have to say.
Not any less than my period repair manual books.
Well, yeah, maybe we compare notes.
Yeah, totally. Okay, Sam, thank you for joining. For people who have not connected with you before, what's the best ways to connect with you? Is it like Instagram, Facebook?
Yeah, so I think catch me on Instagram. I'm underscore inspired.world, or you can connect with me also on LinkedIn. I'm Samantha Kiani, Kiani, or you can just hit me up on my website, which is the three W's, inspired.world.
Fab. Thanks again for your time, Sam. Brought masses of value, and I'm sure everyone will know how much I get from our conversations from just listening to this podcast. So thanks again for joining.
And thanks, Julie, because I think it's such an important topic. Thank you for bringing this to everyone's attention.